More than 16 million Americans served in our armed forces during World War II. Only about 2% of them were women. But we'll hear from one today at 1 on Hometown Heroes.
Their motto for the women, "We're too free a man to fight."
She's one energetic 90-year-old. Just try playing bridge with her in Kingsburg. And she was one of the very few yet very proud female Marines. Hear her story today at 1 on News Talk 580 and FM 105.9. Brought to you by Humana. Proud to honor our Hometown Heroes.
This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from our greatest generation. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories, especially for the benefit of their families, but also for the broader purpose of holding on to history and not letting the price that's been paid for our freedom go unnoticed. As we listen to these stories, we're certainly educated, we're entertained, and if you get out of it as much as I do, you might find yourself inspired sometimes by the way these people lived, the way they see the world still today. Each veteran's story truly is unique, so it sounds a bit strange to call one story more rare than another, but the bottom line is there were a lot fewer women wearing military uniforms during World War II than there were men. Of the more than 16 million Americans in our armed forces during that time period, a little more than 350,000 were women. So that's a little more than 2%. The WASPs were a pretty exclusive group. Women Air Force service pilots made up only about 1,000. There's a new documentary out about what they did in the war. You should check that out. You've heard about the Navy Waves, the Coast Guard Spars. The Army had the WACs, not to mention all the nurses in the Army and the Navy. And the young lady we're going to hear from today was involved in yet another branch of service. You can think about that. See if you figure it out before she tells us. June Moran is 90 years old. She definitely doesn't look it. You can check out her photo on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page if you don't believe me. And my interview with June was recorded under different circumstances from what we typically experience here on Hometown Heroes. I was invited by a group of women known as the Kingsburg Tuesday Club to come and interview June at their monthly meeting. So as 5 or 6 dozen women enjoyed some delicious cake with fresh-made whipped cream on top. Man, I could have eaten a whole table full of that. It was good. They also served, I guess you could say, as our studio audience. So if you hear applause or laughter or other reactions, now you know the context of that. Here we go. 90-year-old June Moran of Kingsburg, California. Well, first of all, June, why don't you tell us all where you grew up? Where are you from?
Pennsylvania. Started life in Pennsylvania. And lived there till I was about 10. We moved to Washington, D.C. during the Depression for about 4 years. And then we moved to San Diego.
And you were moving all these places because your father was in the military, right?
Well, he was retired, but we moved to D.C. because of the Depression. He lost his job in Pennsylvania. They lost everything, actually. And because he was a veteran, he had few extra points on the civil service exam, and so that's why he went to D.C., found a job there.
Did you have a big family, a small family?
There were 5 of us. I had three younger brothers, for which my mother was very thankful when the war came along, because they didn't have to go. I had an older sister, 2 years older than I am, yes.
For those of us who didn't live through the Depression, how difficult was that for you?
Wasn't good. I mean, it was really sad to see your parents change, which I think mine did, especially my mother, because my father had been ill with pneumonia, and in those days they didn't have penicillin to help you get over that, so he was a long time getting over it, but he did survive, but he lost his job, then they lost their house, lost the car, so it meant sacrifice that and move on. And finally, he decided he would go down to D.C., apply for a job there as an ex-service person. And so he worked in the patent office, and finally we moved there. But it was not good at first. Got better afterwards. But there, it was just, you know, they just lost everything. So, you know, you didn't have anything. Mm-hmm. But we managed.
Yeah, you found a way. I've heard that story from so many. And it's an important piece, I think, to the story of our greatest generation. It wasn't just that they were alive at that time. It was what they had lived through before it that gave them the perspective that they needed. So tell me about December 7th, 1941. I ask everybody on this program about that day, and everyone has an interesting memory. The guy I had last week was actually flying into Pearl Harbor that morning. It was a very interesting story. I don't think you were in Hawaii that morning. Were you in Washington, D.C.? Is that where you were?
No, I was in San Diego. Actually, I was in church.
And you had probably just graduated from high school?
Oh, well, I graduated in 42. Yeah.
So you were a senior in high school.
We were the first war class after December 7th, because we had midterm down there. No, my dad let me take the car to church, and my brother and I were, that's where we were. When we came home, here was the news on the radio, and my dad was glued to that radio like you can't believe, listening to everything. Just devastating, and it was unbelievable that this would happen to us, that someone would, you know, it was such a disaster, my goodness. And of course, no TV then. I mean, you didn't see any pictures until in the newspaper a couple of days later, but on the radio, it was constant all day long.
And with your father having been a Navy veteran, and now most of our Navy has been destroyed, that must have been really hard for him.
Very hard. He kept saying something's going to happen. He would get the news from the Naval News, you know, retired person. And boy, as soon as that happened, he said, well, I'm going back in the service. And my mother says, you're too old. They won't take you. He says, oh, yes, they will. They want every man they can get. And he went. In 6 months from that, he was in, like, back in again.
Wow.
And so they gave him the rifle range at Camp Matthews there in San Diego. And that's what he had during the war.
Wow. I imagine that made an impression on you as a young lady, that this was important enough to your father that even at his age he would find something to do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he's military through and through, Navy for sure. And it's a Navy town. San Diego was just inundated with Army, Navy, Marines and so forth, so it was around you all the time. But plus the aircraft industry brought a lot of people from the Midwest out there to work, and that's when the women started working, Rosie the Riveter, etc.
And what was school like the next day, because you had to go to high school the next morning?
Right, well, things were there was no prom dance except in the gym, and everything had to be blackout. You know, everything went to war, you might say. So there was no frills or anything really special. It was kind of bare.
You talk about the blackout, San Diego being in the location it was. There was a lot of fear that the Japanese would show up right there at San Diego. Was that something you were afraid of or concerned about?
I don't think so, but they did have drills every so often, and then the sirens go off, and to make sure your windows were covered, and you dove under the table just in case there'd be something. But we did have Japanese living around, and all of a sudden they're gone. They knew that was going to happen. They mean they disappeared just before the 7th. And some of them had stores, as you know, like a grocery store. And all of a sudden it was closed. It was gone. We wondered what happened. Well, they had the word, and they were gone.
When was it that you decided that this was something you'd like to get involved with? Was that because of your father's example, or what motivated you to? Does anyone know what branch of service June was in? Your daughter does. Some people might be a little shocked when you say this. Tell us which branch of the service that you signed up for.
Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear that reaction?
Yeah, I did.
Some people don't know that there's such a thing as a female Marine, or certainly that there was in World War II. How did you find out about that?
Well, I worked down at Broadway Pier, and I saw so many troop ships being loaded with Army and Marines, and they were, it was just tremendous amount of men that they could get aboard one of these ships. And then they had a USO in downtown San Diego. We used to stop there and see the fellows and, you know, dance with them. And so you got to know them pretty, but they were pretty nice guys that were in the Marine Corps, and that kind of influenced me, I think. And I think my dad was a little disappointed that I didn't go in the Navy. And so he asked why, and I said, well, I didn't like the uniform. It was too sloppy.
You didn't want to be wearing those bell-bottom trousers, is that it?
All right. No, he couldn't argue with that. He said, okay, but I think he was a little crushed. But
so if I read between the lines, it sounds like the guys that came down from Camp Pendleton just looked really good, and you were hoping to meet one of them?
Oh, I met quite a few.
Any one in particular?
Oh, there's one guy who's really pretty sweet on, I guess you'd say. But he gave me a lot of pointers about what to expect in the Marine Corps, which was good, because you're never totally prepared for that, I can tell you. That's something else.
How did your mother feel about you joining the Marines?
Not happy, not happy. But she was very happy that her sons were not the same age as her daughter, so they would have been gone. And they all did serve later in the services, but they were too young to go to war. So she was very happy about that.
Well, I'm sure they had to sign up after their big sister was a Marine. They had to try to live up to that example. So what was it like getting welcomed to the Marine Corps? Was boot camp difficult?
Boot camp was something else. Yeah, it was very difficult. You didn't even know your own name the first week. And you never put any makeup on until the last, we had 6 weeks of boot camp. About the last week, you finally found time to put a little makeup on. Until then, forget it. You were so busy doing your chore. First thing they yell, hit the deck at 6 o'clock, 0600. And you do calisthenics for 10 minutes. Then you get to go to the head. Thank God. Somebody's yelling at you all the time, you know, do this, do that, blah, 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 blah. And as long as you do what they say or jump as high as they want you to jump, you're okay.
And are these women who are training you or men?
We had men DIs, the drill instructors. But other than that, it was women. And we had one gal scared the heck out of us. I think she looked like she was 7 feet tall. She was from Texas, and she had, believe it or not, she had a swagger stick. I mean, she was in control. And you were just a lowlife down here. And she let you know it every day, tells you. And don't think the Marine Corps will do the thinking for you. Okay. So as long as you, you know, went along with it, didn't let it get to you, you're okay. But it was tough. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
She didn't have to use that swagger stick on you, did she?
No, thank you very much. No. I don't think she ever used it. She just felt she had to have that as being important.
What was the toughest part of that for you to get used to? And did you ever wonder, maybe I made the wrong decision here?
I think everybody, the first week you're there, we're all looking at each other. What have I done? I don't know. The hardest part is marching with 29 other women with you. You didn't go anywhere by yourself. You went, you marched to chow, you marched to your class. You marched to chapel. It didn't matter. You took everybody with you. And until you finished boot camp, you were not on your own. After that, then you feel kind of lost. You know, with all these people, where are they go? It was rigorous, but it was good training. I must say it was very good training. They teach you to be observant, which I have found out to be a real asset. There's just a lot of things. It's a totally different life. That's all I can say. Just totally different life. And when you come aboard, they say, oh, you see this nice, clean campus? Well, guess who gets to keep it clean? You do. Everybody had a turn in the barrel with the stick that had a little nail on the end, and you ground pick up trash and put it in the bag. Everybody had to turn. Everybody had a turn at guard duty, and you all had either kitchen police, KP. You know, you were trained to do something. in boot camp.
So did you have an idea of what kind of duties you were hoping to receive as a woman Marine?
Well, I knew I wasn't going to be going overseas, that's for sure. So what their motto for the women, WRs, were this, to free a man to fight. And so we replaced a lot of the fellows in different occupations. I ended up in the personnel office, which was in the general's building, which was quite a ways away. We hoofed it every day. There we had a motor pool. Some gals were really mechanics. Anything that they could release the man to go and do, well, they replaced them. And that was the idea.
And how did you feel about that at the time? Because today we have some people that say, oh, that's a great way to do it. And there's other people that say, well, a woman should be able to go out there and do a man's job. Did you feel that what you were doing was exactly what you should be doing?
I did. Yes, I did. And women's lib was not even thought of then, you understand.
How'd you like your uniform?
I liked the uniform. That's why I went.
And you have pictures, right?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
We'll need to see those. Probably don't have them here today.
I thought about it the last minute, and then I thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't bring them. But I almost did. But,
well, I think all these ladies know where to find you, so you'll have some show and tell later, and I'd love to see it too.
And since we recorded this interview in front of that live studio audience, if you will, the lovely ladies of the Kingsburg Tuesday Club, I have seen the photos, and you can see for yourself on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, 90-year-old June Moran of Kingsburg, California, our guest today, and we'll get more of her experiences as a woman Marine, or as they called them then, the WRs, members of the Marine Corps Women's Reserve in World War II. Hometown Heroes will continue right after this.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words, but when it comes to making my mouth water, I don't need a thousand words, just two of them. Mongolian beef. Okay, two more. Ming's restaurant. And I guess if you want to know where to find it, I should give you two more. Las Banas. That's where I grew up. And I'm guessing Las Banas is somewhere you pass through every now and then. And if you drop in for the Mongolian beef, you might start calling it what I have for years. My favorite place to eat. Period. He may not look old enough for this to be true, but the owner, Paul Cito, has been working his magic in the kitchen there for 45 years now. It's all delicious. If you're a garlic fan, try the Baja shrimp and thank me later. But the Mongolian beef is absolutely unmatched. The flavor, incredible. The texture, tremendous. I can't do it justice with words. You just gotta go taste it. One word of caution, do not go on Monday because Ming's is closed on Mondays. So pick another day, tell them I sent you, and let me know if your taste buds enjoy it as much as mine do. That's Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in lovely Las Banas, California.
If you are a World War II veteran and you have not been to the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., Honor Flight wants to take you there, free of charge. The sooner you submit an application, the sooner Honor Flight can get you to your memorial. In Kern County or the Central Coast, call Lily Marsh at 661-544-VETS. That's 661-544-VETS. Or go to honorflightkernCounty.org. For Fresno, Madera, Merced, Mariposa, Kings, or Tulare counties, check out CV Honor Flight, CV as in Central Valley, CVHonorFlight.org, or call Al Perry at 559-970-9853. That's 559-970-9853. Maybe you're the son or daughter of a veteran and you'd like to go along as a guardian. There are applications for that too, and there are other ways you can help. Donations to Honor Flight are tax deductible. We all owe our freedom and liberty to the men and women who put their lives on the line for it. Let's all come together now behind Honor Flight and give our veterans one more tour with honor.
On the front line of freedom, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, the show that reminds you each week that no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are heroes around you, men and women, who have done pretty remarkable things for the sake of our freedom. And if you're a regular listener, you know that most of the time it is a man who I'm interviewing. 98% of World War II veterans are male. But today we're taking a ladies' look as we examine the role of women in World War II. Many women were part of the war effort without actually serving in the military, from all those Rosie the Riveter types famously toiling away in aircraft factories to the homemakers across the country who simply made selfless choices because of the gravity of the time they knew they were living in. Some of you may know that what got me started interviewing veterans many years ago was a desire to record my grandfather's story of service in the Army Medical Corps in Europe, where he earned the Silver Star and the Bronze Star. And while my grandmother was waiting for him to come home so they could get married, she was doing her part as a filing clerk working under a captain with the Army Corps of Engineers, keeping track of all their heavy equipment that was being shipped out of the port of Seattle. I'm kind of hoping she dozed off during the commercial break so she won't be too mad at me for sharing that nugget with you. The one unanimous refrain I've heard from every veteran I've interviewed over the years is how united our United States truly were during World War II, and the service of the Marine Corps Women's Reserve is another example of that. Ladies who responded to the recruiting pitch of "Be a Marine, free a Marine to fight." You can find those posters from the period on our Hometown Heroes Facebook page, too. Our guest today, 90-year-old June Moran, answered that call. Originally from Pennsylvania, she lives in Fresno County now in Kingsburg, famous, of course, for its Swedish village. But she had been living in San Diego when she signed up for the Marines. And I have to imagine, June, from San Diego, it's hard to get sent anywhere because everybody wants to live in San Diego. It's the best place to live. Did you have an idea of where you were hoping the Marine Corps would send you?
Well, I was hoping they'd send me back to California, but that didn't happen. I stayed in North Carolina the whole time, 2 years that I was in. I stayed there. A lot of the gals got back to California. We had quite a group from California. And my buddy that I went to boot camp with was from Inglewood, California, and she got sent back to Santa Barbara. Lucky girl. But she was in a photo lab. They put her in the photo lab there.
So you were in Camp Lejeune, and how many women did you have there?
Oh, gosh, I can't remember. We had two barracks full of women, and so each platoon is like 29, 30 in a platoon. And so the squad room, we were topside, so we had two platoons there. And a lot of, I can't tell you the number, really.
But you were far outnumbered by the men.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And we had a nice rec room, what they call a rec hall, where they was really nice dance floor, and that's what we did a lot. And, of course, they did serve beer, something like a 2.5-week beer. But because the fellas always thought, oh, your beer is better than ours, and it's colder. So they would stand outside of the rec hall waiting for somebody to come along and because they couldn't come in unless they were accompanied by a WR. So they would wait and, you know, do everything they could to get you to say, oh, come on in with us, you know. They were something else, just dying to get in there.
Well, and if that's the case, I imagine you had the pick of the litter then.
Pretty much. It was a pretty good deal, actually. That was the fun part, really. You could dance every night in the rec hall, and most of us did.
What were your day-to-day responsibilities? What kinds of things did they have you doing?
Well, first thing you up, you make that, what they call your sack or your bed, was a cot, and you had best make it to standard. And always leave your area neat and clean, and your uniforms and everything had to be, you know, facing one way, everything in the same direction. Nothing laying around, nothing on your bunk, nothing on the floor, everything put away. Footlocker inspection was whenever they decided they wanted to do it. And if your footlocker wasn't as neat as they liked it, they dumped it on the floor, and that meant you had to redo it until they were happy with it.
Well, your daughter's here. I'm just curious if your childhood was something like what she's describing now and cleaning your bedroom. No, not that bad, huh? Okay. Did you find fulfillment in this work? How did you feel about what you were doing? Did you feel like it was important, that it was making a difference, or what was your mindset about it at the time?
Well, the fellow that I replaced was so happy to see me. He was from New Jersey, I think. And he said, "Sweetheart, am I glad to see you?" And he grabs me and twirls me around in the office where I'm supposed to be, and then plunks me down, grabbed his hat, he was out the door. He was so happy to be relieved to go out and get killed. But they just could hardly stand not to be in the action, the fellas. They really, really wanted to do it. And then we had a sergeant major, an old salt, that had at least probably 30 years in. But he was pretty nice about it. There were a lot that didn't feel the women should be in at all. What are you doing to my Marine Corps, letting women in here? He was pretty neat with it. And the guys were really happy to see us come in and take over their job so they could get the heck out of there.
Well, and what kind of impression did that leave you with about the men that were overseas fighting this war when you saw their reactions in situations like that?
I know. I give them an awful lot of credit for wanting to go out and risk being killed, because the Marines really got the dirty part of the war. I think the Guadalcanal, the 1st Division, was just terrible. Iwo Jima, Saipan, those places, they threw them in there with, it was terrible, terrible, just terrible. They lost so many men. And yet they were eager to go. They wanted to go and defend our country. They were all for it.
What do you think made it that way, made so many people feel that strongly about what they were fighting for, that they'd be willing to die?
I don't know that answer. I really don't know that answer. But to preserve what our way of life had been in those days, I'm sure, and their own families thinking of, keeping them away from our shores. But who knew what was going to happen? We never thought that Pearl Harbor would happen to us. So from then on, you really didn't. You're on the coast, on the West Coast or the East Coast. There, you're more vulnerable than in Midwest, I think.
Well, and you mentioned some of the big battles that the Marine Corps was involved in the Pacific. Guadalcanal, there was Tarawa, which was very bloody, and Iwo Jima, as you said. There at Camp Lejeune, did you guys find out about that? Were you seeing reports or reading the newspaper? And how did that play out at Camp Lejeune, where all these other people are training to go take their place?
Well, the ones that were returned came back to Camp Lejeune. So once in a while you could get them to tell you a little bit about it, but most of them were very quiet about it. But you knew from looking at them they had been through hell and back. They didn't want to talk about it, really. They were there to be rehabilitated, I'm sure. I don't know if they gave them a different, they gave them stateside duty after being over there, especially if you were there for at least a year or more, I'm sure, before they bring them back and sort of rotate them. But then they gave them, they had the LSDs that landed the fellas, or all the either Marines or the Army. They decided that this would be a good thing to show the public how it worked. And they used the Mississippi. So they would go to certain towns that were right on the Mississippi and show them how they would land men on shore. And they did those as demonstrations. And I think they gave that job to those that returned from being in horrible situations.
And you mentioned the guy whose place you took in the office and how excited he was to get out of there. But tell us what you were doing in that office, because I'm sure some people, some young ladies, might want to know, well, what was a female Marine doing in that office in World War II? What was the big important job you had?
Big important job was that you knew all the fellows that were, the divisions that were being shipped out, and you knew who was coming in. And it was called a strip file, and they typed out all the names and on a strip like this, and you inserted it in a file that was in front of you. You just kept doing that all day for a while, and you did typing and orders, but you knew the troop movement. You knew what was going on in that office.
And was that just a job to you, or were there times where that became personal, where you knew something about someone's name that was on there, or just the magnitude of how many names were there struck you in a certain way?
It was the tremendous amount of men that you processed each day, or you knew, and you were also not to tell what was going on in that. If this was unit was going out, you were not to say anything about it, which most of us kept to ourselves, really. I didn't know anyone that was that as I was pulling those records, but just the amount of personnel that they moved every day was tremendous. I mean, that was a huge base.
One of the other things that I've learned about that base at Camp Lejeune, there was a group from the middle to the end of the war of black Marines there, the Mumford Point Marines. And I've had a chance to interview a couple of those guys and get their story of how they were treated and what their ordeal was. Did you ever see or hear of their presence around there?
Oh, yeah, we knew where they were. They were at Mumford Point, and they were segregated off to another section. But they had a great band. And so they were invited to play for dances, especially if it was an extra special sort of thing. To play for, and they were really good. They were good, but they were segregated. They were on their own at Mumford Point, exactly where they were. Yeah, good sized division of them too.
Mm-hmm. Did that ever, and you're in the South, in North Carolina, did that ever occur to you that maybe things shouldn't be that way, or did it seem strange to you, or that's just the way it was at the time in that part of the country?
It's the way it was in that part of the country, and you best just go with it. Really, I mean, there wasn't any wondering why it was. That's the way it was. Period. And if you took a bus, which we did now and then, went to Wilmington. If you had got on the bus, there was this happened to be a yellow line. They call it a white line, where the back is reserved for the blacks and the front is for the whites. And so we got on the bus one time to go into Wilmington, and all the front of the bus is filled. And here's this yellow line, which didn't mean anything to me, really. So, of course, I crossed it and went in the back and sat down. And the fellow I was with just picked me up by the elbow and said, "I think we need to be up here in the front." I didn't get it until we got off of the bus, and then when I noticed, oh, okay. That was new to me, really new to me, because in the West, I mean, we were out in California, that didn't happen, but it certainly happened there, yeah.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth or take you somewhere that you didn't experience, but when you think back on that now and remembering those dances where that band is playing, or knowing that these guys are wearing the same uniform, then seeing the history that's unfolded since then, do you feel like those gentlemen, by doing what they did at that time, kind of paved the way for what followed with the civil rights movement?
I think it was a big movement there for that. Yeah, I do. They seem to be comfortable with it, but there's always the few that aren't. But that certainly was a start for them, I'm sure. Yeah.
And what about you? If you spent 2 years there, I'm sure not every day was just sunshine and roses. There must have been a few days along the way where you faced some challenges, or maybe someone didn't treat you the way they should have. Were you ever treated differently because you're a woman?
Not really, no. The guys are really nice to us. There was always a few that, man, as they say, the old ones really didn't think we should be in there, but I don't think we were ever really mistreated. No, they were pretty nice guys that were happy to see us there to, you know, let them go and get out of the mode they were in and get off to bigger and better things.
Well, I'm sure they're happy to see you because you're a lot better looking than the guys they were spending all their time with, too.
And that hasn't changed. If you don't believe me, just hop on Facebook and punch in Hometown Heroes Radio. You'll find photos of June in her Marine Corps uniform, as well as what she looks like today. Striking a slightly different tone on Hometown Heroes this time as we hear about life in the Marine Corps Women's Reserve with 90-year-old June Moran. We're not done yet. The rest of the program and a brief look ahead to next week's interview when Hometown Heroes continues right after this. The average age of the veterans on this program is pretty close to 90, so I've seen firsthand over the years the challenges of aging, and I've realized that everybody approaches them a little differently. For some, a friendly senior living community is the ideal option, but for many of us, there's no place like home. I don't have any ruby slippers for you, but I do have an idea. Call Jason Selzler at 317 Construction, recognized by the National Association of Home Builders as a certified age-in-place specialist. Instead of giving up the comforts of home, why not let 317 Construction make your home more comfortable by making it more accessible? Jason and his crew can widen doorways, install ramps for wheelchairs or scooters, reconfigure your counters for better access, modify your shower for safety, secure grab bars wherever you need them, whatever it takes to allow you and your family to keep making your memories in the place that holds so many of them, your home sweet home. Call 905-8490. That's 559-905-8490.
A high school where 98% of graduating seniors go to college, where success on the SAT and advanced placement or AP classes outpaces almost every other school in the valley. Home to a student newspaper that hauls in national awards on an annual basis, its sports teams capture section championships. Have you figured it out yet? The school is Fresno Christian, and it's not just a high school. Fresno Christian offers a complete K-12 curriculum delivered by supremely qualified, experienced teachers who connect with their students personally, intellectually, and spiritually. Go to FresnoChristian.com to learn more about the value of a truly Christ-centered education. And if you want to see for yourself, call 299-1695 to schedule a campus visit. Whether it's kindergarten, high school, or anywhere in between, you'll get a genuine feel for what Fresno Christian's commitment to excellence could mean for your student. That number again, 559-299-1695. Fresno Christian Schools, education with a higher purpose.
This is Hometown Heroes, honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, learning about life as a woman Marine in World War II. Our guest, June Moran, was one of about 23,000 American women who held that distinction. We've heard about boot camp, the drill instructors, the kind of duty she pulled at Camp Lejeune, and how the whole point of women in the Marine Corps was to free up men to go overseas and risk their lives.
Another thing that a lot of people have shared with me, and some of the female veterans have shared with me, times that famous people came through, whether they were actually in the military or just there to provide a show for the soldiers. Did you ever have any of those encounters or moments?
We had Jose Iturbe came to play. And poor guy, he was so ragged looking because he had played for several bases around, but he had promised to come, and he did. He came. We did have a nice theater, and of course it was jam-packed, and that was really a nice treat. We didn't have too many USO shows, but he was one guest that did come, and he, I understand, was very good about doing that.
Yeah, you know, it sure sounds that way. I did a little research. The famed Basque pianist and conductor, Jose Iturbe, went out of his way in 1945 to include Camp Lejeune in a tour of the South. And what June and the other Marines, male and female, heard that night might have sounded a little bit like this. Is Jose Iturbe leading an 18-person ensemble in the classic 1945 movie Anchors Away, which, by the way, won an Academy Award for Best Musical Score. If you've never seen the film, the title alone might tell you it revolves around a couple of Navy sailors in World War II. History shows that Mr. Iturbe himself was very committed to the war effort. that wasn't exactly unique among the show business stars of the day. It just does paint a little bit of a contrast with today's Hollywood climate. Iturbe was born in Spain, but after the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, he volunteered to serve his adopted country. He was an experienced pilot, and he tried to join the U.S. Army Air Corps, but he was 46 years old, and they told him he was too old for the Air Corps. So instead, he joined the Civil Air Patrol, was commissioned as a major there, and spent his time ferrying planes where they needed to go and searching for U-boats up and down the coast. Of course, he also entertained the troops, including June Moran and her fellow Marines at Camp Lejeune in 1945. And now that I think of it, Camp Lejeune was quite an apropos duty station for a girl named June.
And were you there until the end of the war?
Yes, I was there the whole time.
What was that like when you got the news that this war was over?
Couldn't believe it. I mean, the people just went crazy, especially the guys. And they were so eager to get home. Who wasn't? I mean, after all, they had been through. And it took forever to discharge that many. And so the women were left last until they could, you know, discharge all the fellows and get them home. And then they started on the women. So, but it was quite an experience, and I'm glad that I did it. I think I learned a lot from it and helped me a lot in my life.
And you say that. I was going to ask you about that. What do you see as things that you picked up from your time in the Marine Corps that really made a difference in the way you live the rest of your life?
I guess discipline is one. Being mindful of litter on the street is another.
Do you have a stick with a nail in it at home?
No, I have a broom.
As long as you're not flying on it, we're all good.
Haven't tried that.
We know you have a sense of humor. You know, the Marine Corps has a saying, and it's part of the recruitment strategy for the Marine Corps. They say, the few, the proud, the Marines. I guess it's the fewer, the prouder, the female Marines of World War II, because that's a much smaller number. What are you most proud of with your service in World War II?
I think that I made it, that I completed it. But you learned a lot from the other gals as well. We did have one gal that finally said enough. She didn't like it at all. So she took off and she went back home, which was in Georgia. And the MPs went and got her, brought her back, and gave her a dishonorable discharge, which they made all of us watch. And that was not very pleasant, because they start with ripping off your chevrons first and then your buttons. And they just degrade you, really. But it was mandatory that we see it, because that's the only one that ever happened in our barracks. But she just had enough of it, and she wanted to go home to Mama. And so she went. But she was brought. She didn't believe they would come and get her, I'm sure. But they did. So that was a real lesson, that they wanted us to know that.
Yeah, just in case you had any ideas. Do you still have your uniform?
No, I don't. I did for a long time. I finally thought, what am I keeping this for? Out. It's gone. I have my ribbons and one of my insignias and pictures.
And you have your memories. And have you ever gotten any funny reactions when you tell people, yeah, I was a Marine in World War II?
They don't believe it, really. Huh? Well, they really weren't aware so much of women Marines as they were the WAX or the WAVES, because they had bigger numbers, and they also went overseas, and there were a lot of nurses in the WAX, of course, and I think they were more known than we were.
What do you think people today should remember about World War II and what millions and millions of Americans, not just men, did back then?
I don't know. It's you would think that would have been, as they say, the war to end all wars, but we know that it's not true. But it's astounding how many people were killed in that war. It's just unbelievable to me now that when you hear of the numbers, and I have been over to Normandy to see the beaches and the bunkers that are still there. And when you, that beach over there is tremendous. I mean, it's huge. And to think of all those men on that beach and all that were slaughtered, you might say, because they were. Especially if you saw the movie D-Day. That's the way it was, but it was just tremendous. Just, and I hope never again.
Amen. There are a lot of women in the military today. They're all in there voluntarily, just like you were. And they're doing more and more jobs now. And people feel a lot of different ways about that. Do you feel that the opportunities that women have today are there because of what you and some of your fellow ladies in that generation did?
Well, I'm sure we may have paved the way for that to happen. I still think it's wrong to have co-ed as they do now. I think you're really asking for trouble. And as we know, there's been a lot of trouble. But I really think that was not a wise decision to do. But I suppose Women's Lib has gone a little further than we needed to go.
Would you like to go see the World War II Memorial? Would that be meaningful to you?
I have seen it.
You've been there in Washington? What did that mean to you to see?
It was a wonderful, I think it's an absolutely gorgeous thing. And I think they did a wonderful job in the way it's structured. All the states are there. It's a grand thing to see. There's no doubt about that. I was very impressed with it. Very, yes.
And for the ladies who don't know you well in here, how'd you end up in Kingsburg?
Oh, boy. Well, my daughter sitting over there called me and said, Mom, we don't want you down there by yourself. This was after they had all gone, left home. We need you up here. And I said, are you sure? Yes. I said, well, I don't know if I can stand that hot weather. Since we lived really close to the beach, and we lived in Westchester in L.A. area, very close to the beach, very close to Santa Monica and so forth. So we had nice sea breezes and we didn't have to have air conditioning, thank you. And it was never hot. And when I came up to visit here a couple of times, I thought, oh mercy, I don't think I can do this. And so when she said, oh no, we need to have you up here, I said, well, I have to have some water to jump into if I'm up here. So I have a house with a pool. Thank you very much.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they have a Swedish festival down there.
No, they don't. But then I'm not Swedish, so, you know, I'm a stranger.
She's been adopted here in Kingsburg. Is there anything related to your service in the war that I haven't asked you about that you think is important for us to understand?
I know, you did really well, I think.
There is something else I want to know. When I asked you earlier if she looked 90, you all said, no way. What's your secret? What's your secret to staying so young and vibrant at age 90?
Probably part of it's due to the Marine Corps of exercising every day. I don't know, except I probably inherited some good genes, and I've been trying to take care of them.
And, you know, all the Marines that I've met over the years, they remind me, once a Marine, always a Marine. Is that how you feel? Does Semper Fidelis mean something to you?
Yeah, it does. Proud to be a Marine, and you always feel that way. I'm sure you do. At least I do. Yeah, I'm very happy and thankful that I got to serve and hopefully help the country by doing it. But I do feel I learned a lot, yes.
Well, I think we just learned a lot. So thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us about it.
Not at all. Thank you very much. Enjoyed. Thank you.
It was a different twist with our live studio audience. We weren't really in a recording studio. We were in the fellowship hall of the Kingsburg Community Church at the monthly meeting of the Kingsburg Tuesday Club. Thanks to Barbara Troisi for inviting me. Normally, I like to sit down one-on-one with the veterans we hear from on Hometown Heroes. I'd hate for anyone to hold anything back because of a crowd, but I don't think June held back one bit. I've been in 6 different airports in about 5 different states in the last week, and for about 18 hours, I was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. a city that really does honor its veterans. And those 18 hours were long enough for me to catch up and spend a couple hours with an ex-prisoner of war who has a really remarkable story. He's written his story down in a book called 11-2, if you want to check it out. Frank Kravitz is his name, the book 11-2. And we'll hear it directly from him next time on Hometown Heroes. Thanks for spending what I would call a pretty entertaining hour with us today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.